Blog Talk Radio.
You sent me a link today, Bob, and I clicked on it, and Internet Explorer wouldn't let me get on that site.
All right. Well, I'll see if I can send it again. I'm not sure.
Were you trying to give me a virus? Is that what it was?
I was trying to send you stuff to help enhance you more in more ways than one. So that's
all right. I love to be enhanced. At this age, I need all the enhancement I can get.
I know.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Hello again, everyone out there. It is Wednesday, April 25th, 2012, 8 o'clock p.m. here on the East Coast, and after a two-week hiatus, we are back here on Ringside Wrap. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined here on the line right now by Mr. Les Thatcher. And Les, how are you tonight?
I'm not bad. You know something I just noticed with the introduction, Mike, was when Rich was on with us, it was Ringside Wrap with Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, Mike Sempervivi. Now it's just welcome to Ringside Wrap with old what's his name and Mr. What you who we'll call it, right?
You know,
we became the insignificant others.
See, hopefully we don't get too much like WWE where comedy becomes too much first. Although I did get a chuckle out of the preview or the intro Rich did for us there with the old Smiling Bob Enzyte commercial there for Mr. Brutal Bob Evans.
I never heard it.
Oh, really?
No. I mean, I've been on here for a while too, and but I never heard it. So
I have to replay that one maybe after Bo James comes on. And I do want to mention that right off the bat here too. Bo James is going to be on. I'm a little disappointed about this. I would have rather had Misty James on, but I understand Bo's going to be on with us. And I know you know Bo very well, Les, right?
Yeah. Bo and I are friends. And I'll tell you, his book it's extremely interesting. And I will get into that, obviously, when we get him on the air. But, it's I think, well worth the read. And he's a young man who's been in this business a long time and has some very interesting insights, I think, especially you know, at his age and what he's done in the business and how he's done it. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to everybody once we get Bo on.
Speaking of insights, obviously, we're going to probably lead off the show talking about Raw and some of the things that have taken place on the big stage here recently. But we haven't had a chance. I know you did Wrestling Weekly over the weekend with Vic, and I heard a little of that, and obviously I'm really interested in talking to you about how I guess it was a week ago now the Cauliflower Alley club you had a chance to go there for the first time in a couple years, and I really look forward to hearing about everything that took place there. And I guess before we go into that, because I really want to talk about that, but we should probably get the build-up to Extreme Rules out of the way here. Brock Lesnar obviously making an impact, if not exactly on the ratings, although nothing is right now, certainly making an impact as far as the character he is going to be. But watching Raw on Monday, I get the feeling that they just burned through a year's worth of storyline and build up with Brock being an uncontrollable force all in the span of basically 1 week and really in one show. Since we haven't been on and we haven't had a chance to talk about this, what has been your opinion of Brock Lesnar's impact coming back here, and what did you think of Monday night if you had a chance to see it?
Well, I think Brock himself is on the right track. I don't know who's steering the ship or who's guiding him, but the thing that kind of gets to me, well, first I'll go back a couple weeks where Lesnar came out and he and Johnny Laurinaitis were having a conversation, and they kept throwing the word legitimacy out. And I thought, wow, that's good. You know, that's very good. Then they followed the word legitimacy with Santino and Brodus Clay and the Three Stooges and Ron Killings talking to an invisible child. And I thought, so I went back to the dictionary to check to see what the word legitimacy meant, because they obviously didn't have a clue either. What I'm saying there is, you know, you lead with something like that, you think you would follow with something solid, you know, I mean, to actually back up your statement. And, you know, I think a lot of people are saying, well, you know, Brock is on his own. He's, I won't rehash a lot of it, you know, but the whole thing about I'm not a superstar, I'm an ass kicker, and obviously he's, you know, doing, I mean, I'm sure he's getting bullet points, but obviously he's allowed to go on his own, which amazingly enough, you know, is a hell of an idea. I'm glad they thought of it finally, you know, although I can go back some 50 years and cite chapter and verse of several hundred of guys that did the same thing. But, you know, and somebody said to me earlier today, some people on some website had, you know, were incensed at Lesnar. And I said, you mean because he's being a badass or talking to, yeah, well, good. That's exactly what he set out to do anyway. He's cranked himself up. You know, my experience with Brock when he was in OVW was he was a soft-spoken young man, but obviously intense, obviously confident, and had every right to be. So this is just Brock turned up. Again, you think on one hand when you see that, well, they've found the era of the ways. Okay. But they have, you know, but then when you put Hornswoggle with Brodus Clay and you start putting Santino over in tag matches, and you know, and then the poor Miz is going to be on a YouTube title match with Santino. I mean, it's then you got to stop and think, do they really understand what the problem was or how to solve it? Or Brock obviously understands, but does anybody around him? Is it kind of like you can't see the leaves for the trees, or exactly what? I think Lesnar's a breath of fresh air. The one thing I don't like about the whole scenario is I think it's great that Cena has shown vulnerability. That's been a long time coming and a necessity. However, just tippy-toeing around and acting like he's scared to death is not a good idea for a baby. I mean, it's almost from the sublime to the ridiculous, you know.
But and he can't. I was watching it, and I'm sorry to jump in, but I swear he can't act. And I know that, obviously, in what I would say press reference, I don't think of acting first or anything like that, but, you know, when he shows glimpses of, like, being concerned, it's like, you're a football player. You've probably been in a fight before. All these things where I'm thinking, did you look like that when, you know, this is the realest thing that you've had and Brock busts your mouth? It's just, it's so cartoonish, and it doesn't have to be that way, but it's just like, I wonder if that is glaring to anyone else, you know, with like the, only Vince McMahon can do the big gulp and have the Adam's apple go up. I don't want to see that out of John Cena, especially not in this situation where it's just, you have to be concerned that a large man is going to kick your ass. You don't have to be a cartoon about it.
Well, you know, a strong baby face is, I mean, it's not that they don't show humility. It's not that they don't show vulnerability. It's that, you know, they try to stand up for what's right. Now, if that sounds hokey in the year 2012, I'm sorry. But, I mean, you know, in whatever shape they take that, that's what they do, you know, to get people behind them. And apparently Lesnar is being an SOB, of an enough of an SOB that, you know, it's turning a few people, you know, to kind of back Cena. But then if he's going to cower in the corner or get bodyguards or carry weapons, you know, walk around and peek around each corner, then, you know. But the whole point is he has got, you know, he's got to trip Rock up at some point in time. You know, I hate to speculate with these people because I really don't know where they're going. You know, again, when you see, and I think some of this, some of the intensity, some of the edginess is taken off what Brock does by these other stupid things they're putting on the show. You know, I think you saw, it's like, you know, I can, you know, insult you, call you some names, and then offer you, here, have a couple beers, Mike, and some chips, and hey, how about a pizza? You know, I'm going to, and all the names I called you earlier are going to be softened to at least to a certain degree. And I think they've done that again. They're tending to shoot themselves in the foot more than they may realize.
Well, that's why I kept the feeling it was just, you know, and I just call it the summer blockbuster, where they go into this malaise after WrestleMania, but then they have a thing like Vince getting blown up, or Nexus, or last year it was CM Punk, where they have this thing in the summertime that actually wakes people up and garners a little interest, and people get excited again, and then it never goes what one would think is the right way, at least what most people don't consider the right way. This year it just seems like they're starting earlier. There were a lot of people, I know Brian Alvarez, who was out there at the Cauliflower Alley, and there was, and not only him, but a lot of people who had gotten the feeling that John Cena, there is a possibility that John Cena wins at Extreme Rules on Sunday, which I don't, first of all, I don't understand why Brock Lesnar, as everyone has probably seen, has got something very unique, and this is something I'd like to talk to you later on about, which is he got outside sponsors. This is the pull he has and how bad they needed him to come back. He was able to have a contract with outside sponsors on his shirt. They brought it up on Monday where they at least now have said, hey, I'm not going to show up to every single Raw. No, that's in his contract. He's got dates, and he's not going to go over a certain amount of dates, and there's already, I guess there was talk about that, of, you know, already thinking about using him more down the road and these types of things, and will it be an issue? And they brought that up. And basically, I don't understand why you'd want to give a guy a 80-20 contract to do 50-50 booking. John Cena, I mean, it seems to be they have something right in their hands where they have the ability now to not tear down John Cena, but obviously build him back up again with Brock going through him on Sunday. Did you hear any thoughts of like, what would you do on Sunday? And have you heard this? To me, it's an unfathomable thing. And I thought Brock should basically bull right through him. And I'm pretty much saying destroy him because you got Brock Lesnar for a year here, and you.
The only way I see Lesnar losing this thing is he can lose through just, well, he can't. But it's not no disqualification, right? Because that's what is about Extreme Rules.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, you can't be counted out. You can't be disqualified. So and to beat him in any way, shape, or form, I mean. You just started me thinking about it, but I mean, and obviously I'm not that quick. I can't think off the top of my head right this moment of a way Lesnar could lose this without losing some steam. And here we go again. He's Mark Henry of a different style, who, you know, was the strongest heel last year anyway. But I would be amazed. I would be extremely amazed. I think Cena has to, belly up and man up and come at this thing. You know, I don't want to see his Adam's apple popping up and down, but, you know, there's got to be a thread of hope for Cena in this match. But I think, and ultimately, Lesnar has to win it. I don't see it any other way.
you'd think, we saw with The Rock and Cena where you go, you know, you always had faith in WWE when they wanted to really think about something and put their efforts behind it and do the right thing. When they've had long-term things, a lot of times it's paid off. Now, The Rock and John Cena was very rickety a lot of the time. I mean, you know, beginning with having the goofy Survivor Series match. But what are your thoughts about the year of Brock Lesnar? And again, to me, they sped through some things. And you know, I'm not going to play fantasy booking on here, but you have a guy like an Alberto Del Rio where down the line, you know, Brock starts getting out of control and he starts facing quote-unquote other bad guys. And Del Rio's got MMA, an MMA background that you could play off of and things like that. And I thought Randy Orton should be the last guy because he, you know, after no one's left, it would be Randy Orton. And then that would be your build towards WrestleMania with either a John Cena match or with Rock or Undertaker or any of the ways they could go if this thing lasts a year.
Del Rio has an MMA background?
Yes.
I had no idea.
Believe it or not, and that's why, you know, and it seemed to be Vince just fell back in love with him after he made some cracks about The Miz on a radio show. It was an all sports station, I think, in San Diego. We made some cracks about him. But believe it or not, he was a relatively decorated Mexican amateur wrestler. I think they hyped up when he first came in the WWE. They used it the Pan Am Games gold medalist, but that was, you know, a work. But he did go to Japan and faced off against Mirko Crocop, who basically just retired from the UFC, faced him in Pride, wore the mask or a variation of the mask. He came out to the sky-high music that his father and No Mask first used to come out in Japan and got his head knocked off. And that's what that's the only thing people really know him for a high kick. But then he actually stayed with it and fought a couple times in the Deep promotion in Japan and actually did quite well. So he does have a legitimate background there.
This guy doesn't come across to me as an ass kicker. Del Rio comes across to me as a blowhard.
I'm biased towards him because I know that. It's kind of like Dolph where I think I have a little more bias toward him being an amateur. I know what he did. I didn't realize that from other people, though, when it came to Del Rio. Boy, what a waste.
and there's part of the thing, too. Had Brock have come back and played one of the goofy parts that some of these guys play, then which he obviously couldn't do because of his high profile in UFC, which is maybe the only saving grace that they had, or they might have done something stupid with him, too. But that's you're mentioning Randy should be probably the last. As you were getting to that, I was thinking, wow, you know, I don't see that's the other thing, too. There's not a lot of guys in this company that it makes sense to put against Lesnar. I mean, there really isn't. I mean, again, they've painted himself into that corner. There is not, you know, and what do they do with him until, if it is supposed to be he and Rock at the next WrestleMania, what do they do till that time? Now, I think one good thing, if they pay attention to it, is his limited amount of appearances is, you know, it makes them, or it should, I won't say that it will or it does, but it should make them stop and think a lot longer and harder about how they utilize him in that limited amount of time. And they're basically back to in the corner as far as burning him out too quickly, but still, you know, they could turn around and use up a lot of stuff too. I think the way they started, you know, they're off on that track now with Cena. I think, you know, to have him come up more like they're doing with Matt Bloom, to bring him back to get to Cena later on down the line would have been made more sense because, again, they don't have that many. I mean, you sit and tell me how many baby faces, if you're just a casual fan, do you believe actually have a shot at Lesnar? If it's not Cena or it's not Orton, give me the names. That's the answer. You just gave me the answer right there. There aren't any.
Which, that's what surprised me. I know we're bumping up against a break here. I won't get Rich yelling at me, so we're going to go to a break right after this. But that's my thing about, they're talking about possibility now. Orton, Lesnar, Survivor Series. You got a long time to go.
You know, and I mean this. I don't mean this disrespectfully, but I don't look at he and Punk as a great matchup. I mean, CM just doesn't look. You know, I mean, I don't see it.
No, even Jericho, who you know can do everything around Lesnar. Even that, it's not a matchup that you sit there and go, I want to see that. As great as Jericho is, it's just. It's that styles clash, and you got to get past the mental block and things like that, but we're going to talk a little bit more about this, and actually a little bit about the UFC from this weekend, too. Going to sandwich that in before Bo James comes on, so throw to a break right now here on Ringside Wrap.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Les Thatcher along with me, Mike Sempervivi here after our little break there. And Les, did you get a chance to see or hear about UFC 145, or were any guys in the gym talking about it?
No. I mean, you know, I saw a little clip on SportsCenter. Other than that, you know, I know Jones beat, you know, Rashad. Other than that, I haven't seen or heard a thing.
Well, I tell you, in a way, you didn't miss much besides an incredible display of athleticism. John Jones weighs in at 205 pounds. He's got an 84-inch wingspan. He was 85 inches. He's just a massive, incredible athlete who didn't start wrestling amateur until he was in high school. Then went right to the Blair Academy in New Jersey. That's how good he was. I mean, he is a freakish athlete who is picking up things. And if you get a chance to see it on YouTube, against Evans in the second round, which Evans had landed a couple of punches. It was his best ones of the fight, you know, these big windmill punches, because that's the only thing he could really do. John Jones began to start jabbing him and then throwing combinations with his elbows better than I've seen some boxers actually throw their hands. It was remarkable. And it did make me think, throughout all the years that you had and not even just in pro wrestling, but in gyms and watching football and baseball and things like that, who is the best? Because he's just a freakish new wave athlete. Who would you consider the most gifted, skilled athlete that you had ever seen?
Jackie Robinson.
Really? Because, you know, obviously, you know, knowing the legend, I mean, you know, the speed and dexterity, the whole nine yards. Was Jackie Robinson a five-tool baseball player?
Was he what?
But, you know, they always talk about the five, you know, the speed and the hitting and, you know, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, he could field, he could hit, and through the adversity he played through, I think the fact that he held up emotionally and physically through all that was, I think, even more relevant, you know, than was there, you know, maybe a few years later there might have been somebody with more speed or more power or something. But I think as a complete baseball player, I mean, the first time I saw him was his first season in the majors here at the old Crosley Field. Not the first time he appeared in Cincinnati, but later in the season. And as young and you know, unknowledgeable as I was, I had played enough baseball at that point myself to realize, you know, what an extraordinary athlete that this guy was and how special he was, you know. And then I've seen a lot, obviously, but I think Robinson had to be one of the most unique, one of the most complete, and again, put other athletes in whatever sport under the type of pressure that he was under to perform. I mean, this wasn't a case, well, you know, we've taken LeBron James from the Cavaliers to the Heat, so now, you know, they're expected to win a world championship, or now Peyton Manning's expected to take the Broncos to the Super Bowl. You got to realize there was not a lot of people cheering for Jackie Robinson. And the players on the opposing team hoped, you know, I not to a man, but I mean, a lot of people hoped he would fail, which is not the case with Peyton Manning or, you know, LeBron James in that respect. You know, other players aren't hoping that they break a leg or die or you know, don't do well. I mean, you got to realize it was pretty much, you know, when I say this, obviously it's an exaggeration, but it was Jackie Robinson against the world, and Robinson excelled.
Yeah, getting spiked, getting spit on, and that's, you know, not only by fans, but by other people. I mean, threats to his family, and, you know, another one of the good things that will always come out of that story, too, is we're going up against break here to get Bo James on is Pee Wee Reese, who, you know, I don't know what the baseball equivalent of a Purple Heart could possibly be, but him sticking with Robinson and really taking a lot of abuse himself, too, for being one of those people that backed Robinson and was a friend to him, that's another part of the, you know, the cool story. Not only was a great baseball player, but, you know, that story coming out of that, too, is just, you know, when there was so little. Boy, you know, I'm happy I grew up in this era in a lot of ways, because with that type of intolerance and hate and things like that, to have that kind of humanity in the middle of that and sticking up for a guy who was just getting brutalized from all sides is, you know, again, a great story. And as you had mentioned earlier, another great story is going to be coming up here after the break with Bo James. So we'll be right back after this break.
Hi, everybody. This is Geddy Lee for RAD. To many of us, drunk driving is something that other people do. Certainly not one of our friends or relatives would do such a thing. When you see someone who's had too much to drink, about to get into a car, urge them to give up the keys and find alternate transportation. Always choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, you should too.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, parents! Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak...
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
...to 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean,
A fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
How can we help prepare our kids for the future? Hi, this is Martina McBride. These days, our children face challenges unimaginable to us just a generation ago. We adults need to help our kids find something in school that really sparks their interest and keeps them involved. If that something happens to be music, the child will benefit in so many ways. Playing music in school is a great way to make new friends. Studies are showing that kids involved in school music are less likely to get into trouble, and kids who study music tend to find science and math concepts easier to grasp. They even score higher on the SAT. It has to do with the development of something called spatial IQ. So get your kids involved with school music. It's a great way to help prepare them for life.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Fairy residence, Tooth speaking. Sorry, there's no credit fairy here. What's that? He magically raises your credit score? Yeah, there's no credit fairy. But you can improve your credit by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Money under your pillow? Sorry, kids only.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. Brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Les Thatcher along with me, Mike Sempervivi. We'd like to bring on our guest tonight, Bo James, who his book, as Les talked about a little bit earlier tonight, Do You Want to Be a Wrestler, Kid?, which is available at his website, kingofkingsport.com, and hopefully he accepts my Facebook request to be his friend tonight as well. And Bo, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Bo, don't friend him. It's I will say this, that he compared your story with Jackie Robinson. Do you ever play second base?
No, I was the first baseman catcher 8 years, eight-time All-Star.
Now, see, there's something I've just learned that I didn't know. That's exactly what I did in baseball. The first couple years I played the game, I was a first baseman,
yeah.
And then I converted to catcher and was a catcher the rest of my career.
I still hold the batting record here for Little League in Washington County, Tennessee. I batted 700.
Uh-oh.
Good. No cork bats there, right?
Yeah, no cork bats.
The first thing I want to mention, that the book is a very interesting read. I learned so much and was fascinated by it. But the cover of this thing, of course, a lot of young people that would see it wouldn't recognize it, but the cover is a 19... late 50s, early 60s wrestling magazine. Sure in hell. Did you design it that way on purpose?
Yes, I sure did. And actually, I have the first print here that came off the press, and I actually made the top of it look like it was ripped and cracked because, you know, all them magazines, they rip and cracked over the years.
Right.
So they sent me the proof, and it's ripped and cracked, and it looked just like the magazines I have in my office from... And then I got the first print, and they had fixed it. Oh, I was hot.
Shame on.
I emailed them back, and they said, "Well, we couldn't figure out why anybody would want it to look like that."
They had no artistic feeling whatsoever, did they?
No, none at all.
What's some of the oldest magazines you've got?
The oldest thing that I have is from 53 or 54, and it's actually a book, and it's called Let's Take a Look at Wrestling. And it goes through all the offices that were in North America at the time, the top stars, who had television, who had radio. I mean, it's just pretty much a guide. It's like a trade guide to pro wrestling at the time.
That's amazing.
And I got it at a yard sale for a dollar.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That's I had, and they got destroyed, some probably the only NWA magazines that were printed. This was in the early 50s. They were really nice, and the only other NWA magazine ever printed, we did out of the Crockett office in 75, I think. But these, mm-hmm. you know, are the worst for... are not in the best shape either. They would have, your printers would have corrected the hell out of these too. I think part of the most fascinating of the story, Bo, is, well, I mean, you started as a referee, what, age 14, right? Is the first,
Putting up the ring. I was in the ring about right after I turned 15, I started in the ring.
Right. But I think if people read this, part of the fascinating thing, especially if they understand the wrestling business, with the exception of the Memphis territory where you worked, for the most part, you have made a living doing independence in your own promotion. And
yes.
Which is fascinating because, and when I say that, if you're any young independents listening, he's not living in a 10,000 square foot mansion on a hilltop in Kingsport, Tennessee, but you have been able to support yourself and your family over the years through wrestling.
Yeah, it's I've had times when I was a young kid trying to make it, and you know, I was homeless two different times and lived in my car, but you know, I never gave up. You know, I always looked at, all I ever wanted to be was being professional wrestler. I didn't care if I was a referee, a wrestler, a manager, putting a ring up, selling popcorn, ring announcing, it didn't matter to me. Just as long as I was involved and being paid for it. So, you know, most of these guys, their goal is now is they're going to go to New York or they're going to go to TNA and they're going to be the next big star. My goal was to make a living and survive. That's all I worried about. And I also knew that it was nobody's obligation to make sure that I made a living. It was mine to make sure that I did it. So,
well,
it's trial and error.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's just trial and error and, you know, starting young and learning the lessons early. And you know, I came along at the end of the territories, but I came along when there were still a lot of guys working that hadn't worked all the territories and made a lot of money and traveled the world, and they were willing to help you and teach you. And guys that myself and a few others I broke in with, we were willing to listen and take their knowledge.
Well, you know, that's changed, as we both know. But I think another part that made me smile several times as I read the book was, now, you're not an old guy as such. You're, what, 39?
Yeah, I'll be 38 in July.
38, okay. All right.
Yeah.
But you, as you said, now, you were schooled by a lot of guys from my generation.
Yes.
And you, many times throughout the book, throw down verbally on the play wrestlers, as you call them, and how they mistreat the industry. And I found that fat, I mean, because there are guys your age and some older that have, you know, just been on the independents that still, you know, that have that same attitude that, that you and I both look down on. But
yes.
Again, you have had to work with a lot of these guys, and I can appreciate your struggle. I mean, I don't work anymore, obviously, but it's a whole another environment from what you were taught to be, at the beginning.
You know, it's a complete 180, and I just you know, I said in the book, I said when I started, it was all grown men and women trying to make a living, further their careers, further themselves, take care of their families. Now it's either young kids that want to redo what they saw on Monday night or Thursday night, or it's guys that were not able to get in the profession when they were 18, 20, now they're 45 and they're going to be a wrestler. And they've not did anything in the last 25 years to qualify them to even step in the ring.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I was talking to some young people at while I was in Vegas, and one of the things I had mentioned, a couple people had asked me about a finish, you know, and how I'd put the match together. And the one person, I said, well, what is your finish? Well, and this person said, well, I'm going to put my opponent in my submission, and they're not going to submit, so I give them this. And I said, why are they not going to submit? And they just looked at me with a blank stare. And I said, well, it's not a submission if nobody submits. And again, they looked at me with nobody home. But nobody ever told them that before.
Oh. It's just, most places you find me hiding until I go to the ring, because I can't deal with it. But then they'll come ask you something, and you tell them, and then they get hot and cuss you out. Tell you, hey, I've had 12 matches. I know what I'm doing. You know.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember the one story you told about the outdoor show in North Carolina with the bikers and the drunk promoter.
Yes. Oh my. Please, get
that one. We can actually say on the air.
Truly, that day, there's only been a couple times in my life when I thought, today is the day that I die, and that was one of them.
Oh, God. Howie, now, drunk promoters bad enough, bikers getting on their own beat bad enough, and mixing the two, what were the circumstances leading into that, and why did you think that was going to be the end?
Well, they used to run, it was ran at a place called Uncle Bill's Flea Market, and Uncle Bill was... Somebody else had ran some shows there and didn't pay rent, so Bill ran them off and kept the ring and just started running the wrestling himself. He had never watched it, knew nothing about it, didn't know who anybody was, but he just liked being a ring announcer because he got to go out there and talk in front of everybody and be the center of attention. But by intermission, he's about two cases of beer and two quarts of moonshine in, so it's just forget it. And they sold raffle tickets for a lumberjack strap match, which turned out to be bikers around the ring, and it ended up in a mess with us fighting for our lives. It's the only time I've ever had firewood thrown at me, and the only time I've ever seen a dog sicked on somebody at a wrestling match.
Firewood?
Yeah.
If they turned this into a movie, nobody would believe it, would they?
No. That's Donnie Brandon, my pastor that edited the book. He went to school for all that and be a publisher and everything. He helped me put the book. And when he got to that chapter, he called me. He said, I know these stories are real because there's no way anybody could ever make this up. And I said, exactly.
Well, what has been that? You said that you were 15 when you started getting into things. And from how it sounded, not knowing you've had to have other jobs to keep yourself going alongside pro wrestling. But
I've never had any other job.
Really?
Yeah, I've never.
How many times has your faith been shaken? I mean, obviously, coming at the end of the territorial days, and then you get this massive change, and it leads you up to today, and, you know, let's talk about it every week, where, and we have guys every week that come on and say the same thing you do, talk to the young guys, they sit there and go, yeah, okay, and absolutely, and, you know, I'll work on that, I'll do that, and then they go out and do the same damn thing, and it's like, how many times has your faith been shaken in this quarter of a century that you've been in the wrestling business, and how have you ever been close to bowing out of it, or have you always just said, no, this is me, and this is what I'm going to do forever?
Yeah, this is what I'm going to do forever. And I say in the book, when I die, you know, I've already picked up the headstone. It's going to say, here lies Bo James, professional wrestler. I mean, that was... I chose it as a life. I knew the consequences, not knowing how bad they were going to get over the years. And the only other time in my life that I ever got involved in anything other than wrestling, I bought 20% of a traveling carnival and just about lost everything in 3 months.
Oof.
But turned right around and made it back, running towns and staying on the road and doing it all in about 5 months.
You know, Jim Cornette's talked about it, Les has talked about it, you know, and it's, you know, for me being a Mid-Atlantic guy, I didn't, you know, I can only hear the stories and try to place myself in Tennessee and in Kentucky, and, you know, the King of Kingsport, which, you know, obviously was, you know, I don't know if that was handed to you or if you just took that one, but, I mean, what the legacy down there is, how have you been able to live and continue on, and what's the passion there to be able to have a living and enjoy it in the professional wrestling business?
Well, the King of Kingsport, everybody associates that name with Ron Wright, which I'll get to that first. But actually, before Ron Wright, Wild Bill Caney was the first King of Kingsport. He was called the King of Kingsport in the 50s in the Kingsport Times News. They're the one that give him the name. And then he was one of Ron's favorite wrestlers when Ron was a kid, and then Ron ended up taking it from him. And then when I'd moved back from Memphis and we started doing the TV again and we'd moved into the Civic Auditorium downtown, I just by chance ran into Ron Wright and asked him about using the name. I was only going to use it just to get heat on TV and challenge Ron to fights and this and that. And I used it a few times and it just stuck with his blessing. So, I mean, I've been referred to that since 1999, so 13 years I've been the King of Kingsport. But, you know, it's the only thing that drives me, you know, is to get up and go make towns. If I sit here more than 3 or 4 days in a week, I go crazy. I mean, I've got to go somewhere, you know. And me and my wife, Misty, we wrestle on average 3 to 4 days a week. You know, this week is, we only have one day Sunday because we had a cancellation Saturday. But then the following week we got, I'm looking here, 3 days, following week, 3 days, following week, 3 days. So, I mean, we still going anywhere from 12 to 15 times a month. You know, plus we run a few towns ourselves, and we just do it right and don't go crazy on the budget and keep it within our strengths, and we do all right. Plus, we also carry a store with us. You know, you can't walk in the building without seeing our DVDs and wrestling masks and whatever else we got.
Are you still doing your TV, Bo?
Right now it's just online, but we're going back on Sundays, starting here, as a matter of fact, just a few weeks, going back Sunday at 1 o'clock on the CW4. But, yeah, right. I still put a TV together every week. And Tony Givens has a TV here on Saturdays, and so does Josh Crawford. So, I mean, there's 3 times a week, and we trade talent and use different guys. So, you know, that's one thing. Here, there's 3 regular television programs. There's regular towns, and we've created our own stars. We've protected our towns, and we run it like it should be ran.
And that's a whole other world.
Yeah.
We're a whole other world.
Yeah, a whole other world. Where most places, if somebody runs and, you know, they draw a good house, somebody's running there next Saturday. Or you go to Knoxville and somebody's running the rec center and you look across the street and somebody's running a free show in the parking lot.
counts. That would be the person we both know.
Yes.
And we won't even mention his stupid name.
He's not even worth putting over.
No. Yeah. Shooting maybe, but not putting over.
I think Jimmy tried that once.
Or I think Jimmy tried to run over him. Or he tried to run over him. Jimmy tried to run over him. Yeah, that was the deal.
I go places and see. I mean, like, we went to NWA Mountain State over the weekend in West Virginia. They've got a hour-long TV, and they've got a good good production, real good production. They got some good young talent. But it's just where they're running, so many other people have just ran those towns and false advertised and raped them and ripped them off. And, you know, they're fighting a struggle up there.
That's something you mentioned in the book that when I first started promoting around here, a lot of these kids just never understood why I was incensed at some of these half-assed promotions. I said, well, here's the problem. ABC promotion goes into a town and takes $10 a head or whatever it is from these people, and you see all these horrible guys with no talent. Then EFG promotion comes in and does the same thing, and since we don't have the money to put a big fancy TV and everything, the fact that our talent's head and shoulders above theirs, and we try to run, they're not going to give us a chance because they've been stiff twice. And they just figure all independents are the same.
Yeah, they just know wrestling. They don't know names. They think everybody, you know, it's just they know wrestling. Well, we went to that one time, got ripped off. We're not going back.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because there is some good promoters out there. There's some good talent out there, but most of them are fighting such an uphill battle. You know, and it's just.
What do you feel right now about that? You know, obviously you talked about the West Virginia now, Al Snow and Danny Davis and OVW having an NWA Hollywood, and there seems to be. I'm not saying a return to independent wrestling. That would not be the right way to say it, but there are some good promotions who are having success with online and garnering interest that way, and the pie is spread really thin. You know, it's just cut up into so many pieces. It's incredibly tough nowadays. You know, much less with all the problems with guys who don't know how to work and the whole nine yards there. But what is your gut telling you right now as you travel around and as you look at other things and you look at your own product? As far as how do people feel about independent wrestling?
Well, it's only going to get worse. Because there's only so many guys left that are from the territory days, and the majority of them that are left, nobody will listen to them. Anybody can get in the ring, anybody can call themselves a wrestler. Anybody. There's no governing bodies. There's nobody to stop it. You know, there's nobody to show up at your house when you're eating dinner with your family and, you know, break your legs and tell you if you put the ring up again, it's going to be worse. And that's... The only way to fix it is with some well-planned and thought-out murders. That is the only way to stop it. Because if they're dead, they're not going to be promoting.
So what you're saying is we need to return back to the NWA days.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he's saying,
But not with the NWA that's there now.
Well, no, not that one. But,
there needs to be. But the problem is this. Nobody... you know, one of the hardest things about writing the book was to open up about some things. And then when you still read it, I still never open up about everything. Because Rick Connors told me when I was 14 years old, what goes on here stays here. If you break this, they're going to find you floating in a river somewhere. And I, to this day, still turn the news on waiting for a mass report of all these wrestlers that have washed up somewhere, that somebody has took them out on their way out. But... There's no secret. They've let the cat out of the bag. You know, people's known wrestling as a work since the beginning. They didn't care. But they don't want their intelligence insulted. They don't want it slapped in their face. They don't want it to be made fun of. You know, every movie you watch, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, let me tell Mike real quick a digest version of who Rick Connors is. Rick Connors is a guy probably weighs $190. He used to sleep all day, stay up all night, and for fun, he'd go over to what the hell's the college down there, Bo, where he used to go work out?
He'd go to Carson Newman and the University of Tennessee. He'd go to both of them.
And he'd go work out with their amateur, their teams, Mike, and beat or hold his own with all the kids he worked out with.
Wow.
And that's who he's talking about with Rick Connors. So if Rick told him, you know, either stay here or I'm going to break your leg, he meant what he said. It was
exactly right. And was a tremendous help to me when I first started. You know, but you know, it's Les, when you started in your time and even in mine, you didn't run your mouth and tell people what you know. You sit down, you shut up, and you listen.
Right.
And a couple of weeks ago, I was sitting in this dressing room, and it was so loud. And I'm just over there lacing my boots up, and it's so loud because everybody's in there running around, playing, rehearsing. I mean, it's just fun time. It's a social gathering. It's like a softball game, you know, or bowling league. I mean, there's no semblance of a professionalism at all in there. So
right.
I just told them, sit down, shut up. I don't want to hear it. I mean,
yeah,
you
mentioned in the book a couple times what I've said, and I've heard other guys say too, is you go in, there's more people in the damn dressing room than there are buying tickets, and your next door neighbor who rode with you and his son and this person and that. I mean, it's like, who are these people? You know, and I'm sure you're the same way with me. If you're not working on this car, then you don't belong in here. That's as simple as
that.
No,
not at all. You know, not at all. And I see it everywhere. Their wives, their kids, their girlfriends, you know, and I tell them, leave them at home because there's no bigger cancer than the wives and girlfriends sitting out there together. Because it doesn't take long for them to start talking about, you know, what your husband did, because the boys go home and tell their wives everything they know. And it just trickles down from there.
Well, you know, the Crockett territory, for years, that was, you did not take girlfriends or wives to the matches, period, end of story. That was the whole deal
and
there.
Yeah, that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
That's, I thought that was, I mean, wasn't that the case pretty much across the board almost everywhere?
No, not really. I mean, at least it wasn't a hard and fast rule, but it was with the Crocketts.
Huh.
It was when I worked for Lawler and Dundee. It was
yeah.
They didn't want them there. They held to that.
Yeah, the first time that my mom and dad came to Charlotte on their summer vacation, I went into Mr. Crockett, and said, Jim, I would appreciate if I could bring my mom and dad to the matches at Park Center. That was Charlotte on Monday night. I said, they're here for a couple of weeks. They're going to see some of the tourist sites around the area. But I said, I don't want to take them every night. I just like taking the matches once. And he said, can they work? And I said, but what he meant was, if I was selling, would they react to it? And this is part of the reason that the rule was so strictly enforced in Charlotte. Excuse me, Mr. Crockett used to sit at a table in the lobby at the Park Center on Monday nights, and he was accessible to the fans. I mean, just anybody that came in, he would sit. They had some of the baby faces go up and do autographs, but Mr. Crockett himself sat up there and talked to people. Hey, how you doing, Charlie, Joanne, you know, that sort of thing. And anyway, I don't remember who the culprit was, but some fan came up to him and said, had pointed out to him that the week before, one of the baby faces was having his ass handed to him, and his girlfriend was sitting in the audience, not reacting at all, reading a book.
Yeah.
Oh. So Mr. Crockett said at that point, that's it. No more wives, no girlfriends. So that's why he'd ask if my mom and dad could work. If they weren't going to sell me when I was selling, then he didn't think they, you know, didn't want him in the building. I said, I think they can handle it, Jim. I'll take care of it. But I would have never dared taken them to the matches without asking first, because it just,
you know, you talking about that. There's another thing that's you look at how he sit out front and he was accessible. Bob Polk was that way in Knoxville. He knew everybody's name. Bob Polk told me when I was 14 years old selling programs, he said, the best advice I can give you is learn people's names, because when you call them by their name next week, they're going to buy a program. And but he also would stand there and listen to their complaints or their ideas or, you know, whatever. And but that's missing too. The mom and pop wrestling is gone. I mean, it was our wrestling, like Southeastern here in East Tennessee. That was ours. We saw Charlotte TV. It came on every Saturday right before we saw it. But Knoxville was something special because it was ours. And that's something that's missing too.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the territories had, well, you know, and that's the thing too. You could come down to Knoxville and run into any of us in a grocery store at a restaurant, the same as Charlotte where the home offices were, Atlanta. I mean, it wasn't uncommon, you know, to look in the checkout line at the department store or grocery store and see somebody you've been watching on television. You don't, that's not something that happens at all anymore, so.
Yeah, and it's and the thing too, one of the biggest, I mean, you look at Carolinas was such a populated area and it was so big, Charlotte, Greensboro, but they didn't have the NBA and NASCAR wasn't as big as it was, so the wrestlers were the sports heroes. And the same here is there's not a day that does not go by that somebody does not bring Whitey Caldwell up to me or my wife around here.
Because let me ask you a question when Whitey. When Whitey got killed in the car, how were you alive, or how old were you?
I wasn't even born. Was it?
Okay.
He died about 18 months before I was born.
Is that right? Okay.
But,
all right.
But he, my granny, who gave me the love for wrestling, she was a big Whitey Caldwell fan, and I've heard about him all my life. And then, you know, and just any wrestling fan, when we go to church, there's three or four older gentlemen there that grew up with him, and they all will tell you what an athlete he was, wrestling, football, swimming, basketball. I mean, there was no sport that he couldn't play and play well. You knew him well. I mean, he is the man here and will always be the man here. He set the attendance records here that will never be broke. And people cared. They were emotionally attached to him.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you know, the reason I ask about that, because, the Crockett's, John Ringley, they had a what wasn't their plane at the time, but a plane that they chartered occasionally. And when for the funeral, John brought Frank Morrell and I, and Mike, you don't know, Frank Morrell is a product of the Tri-Cities in Tennessee. Frank was
he grew up two exits from me. Frank grew up in Blountville, I grew up in Fall Branch, two exits apart.
Yeah. But we flew up for the funeral, and I'll never forget. We rented a car, and when we got there, there were hundreds of people lining the sidewalk on both sides, and it was like running a gauntlet to get in for the services. I'll never forget that. I mean, it was like the whole Tri-Cities had turned out, you know. So
that's why. When it came to, you know, heels, in a situation like that, were any heels able to go to the funeral? I mean, at that time, I mean, how was the business side of things handled with that?
Don't remember who Frank went, because he wasn't working the territory at the time, so there was no, you know, current connection. I went because Whitey and I had been tag team partners and Tennessee tag team champions. But and we were the first hot babyface team off of John Kazana's television.
Yeah.
As the rights were.
They did two services. They did a service for the boys that were working here, and then they had the other service.
They were
a day apart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was always wondering, a situation like that. I was always wondered how those things were handled. And I know it's gotten to the point now where there's wrestlers just don't go to funerals and things like that. I guess that's changed a little bit after Eddie Guerrero's. But, you know, I always wondered how that situation was handled because, again, Les talking about, you know, your experiences there and other people where the name Whitey Caldwell, it's just, it's amazing how it's, is there anything close as far as another territory, as far as somebody that meant that much? I mean, could you say Johnny Weaver and Les, you know, working in Mid-Atlantic? I mean,
well,
is there
yes and no, because the Carolinas was a much bigger area where the Tri-Cities was more concentrated. I mean, you got to realize Knoxville was only 100, what is it, 90 miles, Bo?
Now, the old days on the old 11, probably 120 miles. It's about 90 now with 81 and 40. You know, so, yeah, and they ran Johnson City Tuesday, Kingsport Wednesday. Thursday morning they did TV. Thursday night they did Bristol. And then some of the boys went to Knoxville on Friday, or Mickey ran a spot town. They ran a spot town on Saturday. So the furthest trip here out of the Kingsport office was Marion, Virginia, which is 70 miles. They ran 5 days a week within that 70 square miles.
So you got to realize how concentrated that was. Plus, he was a local guy. You know, he went to school there, and worked there. Where the hell did they all work at?
He worked at the glass plant, and Ron and Don worked at the press.
Yeah, right. That was it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So they were
and
all.
He was a local teenage sensation. He was a high school star in every sport. So he was in the paper, but that's the reason Mickey Barnes went after him, to get him. And the only way Whitey would agree to go is if they would break Ron and Don in too.
Wow.
Yeah. Those were the days. Those were the days. We have another tremendously great friend who's passed away in Brian Hildebrand, and you mentioned Brian in the book, and that was, to me, and I said that at the Pillman show when I introduced him the second year, that was 99 when he passed away. I said, when we first met, he said, I'm a fan of yours, and I said, I became a fan of his, not only a fan, but he became a role model for me because, regardless of his size, he had to be one of the strongest human beings mentally that I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, and too, he was, even now, like if he was with us now, because it had changed from the bigger guys to the smaller guys, because he was an unbelievable talent in the ring wrestling. He was just, so little. But now things are different. He was actually, I was flipping the channels last night, and there he was on the Biography channel last night. They were rerunning some kind of wrestling program they did years ago. And I saw him late last night before I went to bed. But, he could do anything. He could promote towns. He could put a match together. He could referee. He could work. He loved the business like we did.
Yes, you're right. Chris Jericho said, he said, I never figured it out. He said, Brian could sit down and watch the worst match I've ever seen in my life and find something good about it. And I said, yes.
And the last 3 or 4 months, that was, he came, he would still make my towns. I would beg him not to come, but he said, I got to get out, would go to Tim Horn when Tim ran something, and it just, he loved the business, and that just took his mind off of everything.
Yeah, well, that's the 99 Pillman, the second year. Originally, the idea was for him to referee the main event, which was Conan and Mysterio against Benoit and Malenko. But now, a few weeks before that, they had put the port in his shoulder where they had to feed him.
And
he was losing weight, and Pam had called me to tell me that they were going to have to take him to the hospital for a couple of days in case I had tried to call the house. And he's yelling in the background, tell him I'll be at the show. Tell him I'm not missing the show. I mean, that was – and this Mike, he was under 100 pounds at the time because they couldn't keep his weight up. But he came to the show, so we decided that he should referee – we called it a Legends match. It was Dr. Tom and Terry Taylor were working. Mm-hmm. And so we decided that their pace was going to be a little slower, so he should referee that. So I was doing the ring announcement for the Pillman show. And so he decided he was going to do the main event anyway. He did Terry and Tom's match, but he wanted to do the damn main event. And so you know, I introduced him, and he came out, and he got in the ring, and I said, are you going to be all right? He said, well, are you going to be at ringside? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, if I don't make it, you can carry me back to the dressing room. And I said, yeah, I damn sure can. And, I mean, that's just the kind of heart he had. I mean, that
yeah.
was...
He kept him going, and it did keep his mind off of it, and it was, he fought such a battle. It, I mean, it just, you know, and I say in the book, too, he never ever said to me, hey, I'm sick, or, you know, or anything until about 3 days before he passed.
Right.
He told me, he said, it's got me, it's got me. And that was hard to deal with, because then he had been so positive about everything up until that point. And it the last 3 days were just they were just awful for him. I mean, it
yeah.
just it was awful to sit there and watch it. And
I'll never forget at the funeral. Several of us spoke, but at the end, there was Foley, Terry Taylor, myself, Al Snow, and I forget there was like five or six of us just standing around the coffin with our arms around each other, just crying our eyes out. I mean,
yeah.
It was amazing. Brian brought a lot of people, and when I spoke at the funeral, that's one of the things I said. He was the kind of person, Mike, that if he told me I should be a friend of Bo James, then I never questioned that, because if Bo James was good enough for Brian Hildebrand, he was good enough for me. That's how several of us that got together became friends over a period of time was due to Brian hooking people up, but he had that.
Yeah, that's
that
how
kind
I got
of,
to know Mick Foley and Eddie Guerrero was from them coming and visit, because I would go to Brian's every day just to make sure that, you know, Pam was all right, because she had so much on her trying to take care of him and
right
and dealing with what was going on, you know, and it just was a rough 2 years, but I mean I don't know how he kept himself so positive.
I don't either. But yes, and I'll never forget that answering machine, because it said Brian, Pam, Renfield, and Thatcher are not home right now. They named the, he named the cat after me, for Christ's
sake. Yeah.
In fact, that was my opening. You know, and I did not come to the funeral prepared to speak, but I felt after I got there I should, and that was the first thing that came out of my mouth, because talk about improv. It was just what I said. Why do I love Brian Hildebrand? Well, no one else ever named a cat after me, you know.
I think
he would have expected us to be
cat.
Goofy. Yeah, Foley got up, he tried to one-up me. He said, I thought Cactus Jack would be a good name for a cat. like he was offended that he didn't have a cat named after him. But,
well, Paul,
yeah.
You know, thank you so much for coming on.
I'm glad. Just real fast, Les, that's another thing that's missing right there. Look at the brotherhood right there. That's
yeah.
That's gone. There's nobody.
It is,
I mean,
right.
It's just so far gone. I mean, you look that day at that funeral, there was guys from literally all across North America came to that funeral.
Right, right.
And you know, because we loved each other, we loved him, it was a bond, and it's just changed so much. That's not there at all anymore.
No, you're right, Bo. You're right.
Well,
before we wrap this up, plug where we can buy this book. And I suggest anybody listen to this, buy the damn book. It's well worth the read.
Well, even before that, I had to ask Bo, before we did wrap it up, just still getting my head of selling programs at 14, everything, and getting into this at 15. How exactly, I mean, why at that young of an age, what was it about you that it was like, you were under, you know, you were taken under the wing and you were actually,
well,
you know, shown the ropes?
I mean,
that's an incredibly young age.
Yeah, I had two cousins that worked, and Les knew both them, Melvin Johnson and Zach Murray. So I had been around wrestling all my life. And I got to be pretty good friends with Davey Rich, David Haskins, when he was working here for Fuller. He was about, I guess, 20 years old, and I was 14. And he told Ron West in passing one day, he said, Ronnie, give this kid a job. He loves our business. and he's always around. And Ron West had started about the same age, doing the same things that I was doing, and he gave me the opportunity.
Okay. Well, see, you know, obviously, as Les said, you know, hey, plug away. Plug away Southern States Wrestling, plug away the book, and, you know, just, yeah, it, where can you buy the book and all that
stuff? You can buy the book and also the DVD that I just did with Bill Dundee that's 6.5 hours long, where we go through his career pretty much week by week, month by month, year by year. KingofKingsportAllOneWord.com, and you can get the book also at Amazon.com. But if you buy direct from me off of my site, I will sign a picture, so will Misty, will send that to you, plus a DVD that has a lot of the events that I talk about in the book on the DVD.
If I buy one of everything, can you autograph it and say something nasty about Les?
I can't say anything bad about Les. Les is actually in the dedication of the book. You know, Les's voice narrates my childhood memories. I've watched him every
That's
week.
That's scary, isn't it, Semper Vizi? That's frightening to think of that.
Well, Paul, will you come on again with us soon here?
Anytime you want me, just let me know.
Awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate that.
Bo, give my best to Missy and love you guys, and God bless you.
I sure
you,
will.
Friend.
She's in the other room listening, but I'll tell her too. So, thank you guys very much. I was a very
thank
happy
you, buddy. On. Take care.
All right. Be good. All right.
Everyone listening, we'll be right back after a break.
Hello, this is Robin Zander.
Hello, this is Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick for Rad.
Some people think it's fun to drive drunk, but that's unacceptable.
Be smart. If you drink,
don't drive.
Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
To be a good father is the most important job in a man's life, but it doesn't have to be hard. Play catch, go to a park or visit a zoo, help your child with their homework, sit down together for dinner, ask them how their day was. Things get busy, and sometimes we all fall short, but the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today.
Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi, I'm Bruce Hornsby. You know the expression, practice makes perfect? Well, it certainly is true in music. And practicing music is one of the most valuable ways a student can spend his time, or her time. A young person who studies music reinforces teamwork, communication skills, self-discipline, and creativity. All qualities kids need to be successful in their other schoolwork. Parents, think about encouraging your kids to try out several instruments at school until they find the one that they really like, the one that really clicks for them. Get to know the school's music teacher and encourage your child to join school music ensembles. And please don't forget that your kids all have an instrument that's free and sounds wonderful, their voices.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
We're back here on Ringside Wrap, Les Thatcher and Mike Sempervivi, and like to thank Bo James very much for coming on. And Bo, you know, I apologize, we've been off for 2 weeks, I'm a little rusty, and much like Fred Allen once said about Jack Benny back in the day, Benny was born ignorant, and he's been losing ground ever since, and that's kind of been the case with me. At some point, Les is actually going to have a seminar that I'm going to pay to go to, which is actually going to help me, you know, work on my transitions and intro and outro of this show.
So. Okay. I do private one-on-one sessions. Mike's a little more expensive, but I can be had. So.
Well, I tell you what, because we're gonna do about 10 minutes here before we go into the old school segment, which is basically gonna talk a lot about the CAC. But you brought up the NWA wrestling magazines from the early 50s, and we could probably make a trade. You help me out, and I'll give you the copies of the September and October of 1952 NWA official wrestling magazines that I have.
Wow. Who's on the cover, you remember?
It's Enrique Torres and Ben Sharp on the cover of October 52. I took it out here. We always got to be careful with these things.
I haven't had mine out and haven't seen in a while, but the one is Nell Stewart on the cover of one, and I think Pat O'Connor on the cover of the other one that I've got. I forget what exactly years they are, but they're around that same time. But I don't know what happened to those or why they were stopped, but since then, we did the one and the only NWA magazine ever in 1975 out of the Crockett office. So
I really wish I was able to save the programs. I have been going to the Baltimore Civic Center when I was a kid and everything, because it's just, you know, it's not the same anymore. And for anybody that, you know, but I know a lot of people listening certainly don't go to WWE shows anymore. But essentially, all you're doing is buying the copy of the magazine. Most of the time, they don't even have a sheet anymore of who's coming up to wrestle. I mean, you know, God knows the localized promos that would get you excited about who was coming to your town, and these things were planned out. It's gotten to the point now where they don't even put a run sheet in there of who's going to be on the card, which is just drives me nuts. And that's why you've got to be so careful with these things, because, you know, he says it's just, you know, I don't know how many Cornette's actually got in his attic, for God's sakes, but I know a lot of things were wiped out in the flood. The National Wrestling Hall of Fame, you know, a couple of years ago, and Mike Chapman, and it's just, you know, this type of stuff. And, you know, like Bo talked about, I mean, this the tie-in and the emotional tie-in and what makes people wrestling fans and collect these things. And then Bob Evans has got a hell of a collection of stuff too. And, you know, the running out of people with that kind of passion, and it's too bad. It really is. And it's just, it's sad, but with that said, hopefully that there's people like me and there's hopeful, you know, people along the way, and Bo being so young too at 39, that hopefully somebody will one day maybe listen to us one day, because we try to listen to you guys, and then hopefully can continue to pass on this passion. But,
you know,
really
that's something.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, please.
I was to say there, you just give me a transition into what really hit home with me at CAC this year. I mean, I hadn't been there in 5 years, had a good time, you know, enjoyed myself, saw a lot of people hadn't seen in a while. The Gold Coast, I'd never been there. It's a nice casino hotel. I don't gamble, so if it wasn't a casino, it wouldn't matter to me anyway, but the rooms are nice. You know, the banquet meal was, you know, nice. You don't normally expect that at banquet meals, but it was very good. I flew in on Sunday and home on Thursday morning and had just a really good time. Two things jumped off the page at me. When the last I'd been out there was the last year that Harley and Scott Casey and I ran the training camps. We did that for 4 years running, and you know, we picked the better guys from the camp or girls, whatever the case may be, to work a show. This was back when we were doing it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Now it is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But anyway, they've gone to seminars. And I went to all the seminars, part out of curiosity, just to find out, you know, what they were and what was going on. And I can't tell you the name of each and every one. They were all on the itinerary. But at one, they had a psychiatrist and a psychologist to help talk to you about characters and why a character was and how to develop it and that sort of thing. They had seminars on how to make a transition from wrestling to another life in terms of jobs and that sort of thing, and how to deal with that and with being positive and making the transition. They had a seminar on psychology, which was titled "Don't Play Checkers, Play Chess in the Ring." Jim Ross did a seminar on what WWE was looking for, but in part he also said a lot of it was his own opinion, so it wasn't necessarily based on company policy or anything. But each one of these was valuable. And here's the thing that bothered me about each one, is there were more fans and promoters in attendance than there were wrestlers. Now, there were a lot of young wrestlers posturing and walking around that place, you can always tell the way they dress I want you to know I'm a wrestler, which is cool. But they weren't attending these seminars, and that was who this was for, you know. Like at the psychology thing, in fact, somebody tagged this on Facebook today. Nigel McGuinness, Bill DeMott, and I were sitting in the back watching the thing, you know, and paying attention. And I'm thinking, where the hell are the wrestlers? Now, there was a little core of guys from around Arizona, and the reason I know they're from Arizona, they talked to me because Derek Nykerk, who I trained, had mentored them in the wrestling business. And then there were some young men from up in Canada, who seemed to be at each and every one, but for the most part, they were fans. And I'm thinking, I mean, not that I, don't get me wrong, I mean, the fans had, you know, paid their money to be a part of CAC, so it wasn't that I'm upset that they attended. I was upset that the wrestlers didn't attend.
Well, I heard you say that with Vic on Saturday, and so I went to the CAC website, and it really, surprised me with that, especially the Hanley bumps outside the ring one was, looked really intriguing, but I heard you say that, and it was like, I think I've talked about this on this show too, I was always hesitant on doing anything besides making a donation to the CAC, because it's like, obviously it's not like Mobile, but it's like, that's where you guys go and young guys go to listen to these seminars and everything. It's like, in a way, it's cool for me as a longtime fan to go, that people are that interested and they want to go listen to these things. But I just don't understand why wrestlers, you're there. Harley being there, Ricky being there, and you being there, and JR, I mean, with everybody that was there, what are these guys doing instead of going to these things? I mean, what are they, like, posing next to ice sculptures?
I guess partying or walking around, you know, being cool, or sleeping in. I'm not sure, Mike. But, well, you know, and what you just said was said by several of the monitors at these seminars, is that, you know, you have an opportunity over the next couple of days. There are, you know, the men here who have taken this journey, you know, there's thousands of years of experience. You know, it's all right to have your picture taken with them or ask them for an autograph, but also, you know, they're open for questions. And again, it was not, you know, I did talk with some young men, and we talked, you know, psychology and this and that. Ron Hutchison, who trained Edge and Christian and Gail Kim, he and I met for the first time and had a real nice conversation. Ron's a real good guy. He knew my reputation. I knew his. We've worked with one another's talents, but we'd never actually had a chance to meet. And he found out that I don't really breathe fire, which was kind of amazing. But you know, the deal, like, and there was an ongoing theme that came out of this, too. One of the things, on JR's especially, which was the most attended, obviously, because that was the biggest name, it was like, you know, have a plan B, have a good character, and it's not a character in the ring, but, you know, a good character in yourself. In other words, honest and a good work ethic and that sort of thing. One of the things that he said, too, he said, you know, this is a physical business. This is an image business. You can't look like a salesman at Best Buy. You should look like, you know, a wrestler, a professional athlete. But, you know, now Chris Cruz, I know, on another site somewhere, posted a column talking about, you know, JR's seminar. But the one thing that went on outside of this, I mean, it was said in a couple of seminars, but it was also said at the podium at the awards banquet on Wednesday night by some insignificant people you probably never heard of, by the name of Steve Austin, Ricky Steamboat, Sergeant Slaughter, Bill DeMont. Jim Ross made the same comment at his seminar. Kiyosarni, made the comment at his. Vance Nevada, I don't know if you know who Vance is, from Western Canada, who's authored and has also wrestled, had made the comment. But the comment was, if you're planning your match in the dressing room, you are not a wrestler or a worker. Learn to work. That was the ongoing theme from all these people. Learn to work. One of the great, and it was funny, but it's also so true. JR, I've said it myself in varying ways, never said it in this way, and JR says, so many of these young people are only interested in the holy shit spots. Once they hear holy shit, they're happy. They don't, you know, and I thought, wow, this touches a lot of people in WWE, in TNA, and in Ring of Honor. Bob's listening. It does. I mean, and that is the truth. That's all they're concerned with. Is that seems to them to be the answer to it all. And it's obviously not. And I'm thinking, this is why I think that the young people should have heard all this and paid attention. You know, this is not a 71-year-old man talking. This is Steve Austin. This is Ricky Steamboat. Bill DeMont, who just up until just a few years ago was actually still working. And these guys are trainers and top people in the industry are saying the same thing. Somebody needs to friggin' listen. And it's a shame that now at the banquet, obviously there were over 400 people at the awards banquet, and so they had to hear, but hearing and listening are two different things. But that, you know, but now, you know, I have fun in Las Vegas. I had fun when I was younger. when I went to the NWA conventions out there back in the 70s. But the point is, you're there. It's a business thing. If you're a young wrestler in this industry, go and have fun. Go and gamble if you want to. Go and party if you want to. But also, don't waste your time just doing those things. Open your ears, attend these seminars, and learn, for Christ's sake. That's in part, I mean, where else do you find this many guys? I mean, you know, there's a few places. Charlotte, you know, coming up in August, you'll find a lot of, you know, of the guys from who have been to the dance, you know, but how often do you have that opportunity? And it's just, I found it was such a shame that there were not more wrestlers attending these seminars. And it's just, I, and how do you get them there? I don't have a clue. I mean, you can't force it on them, but it's like they're already so knowledgeable that what can they be told by people who have been doing it longer than they've been alive? I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, it's like, and it's not, for those who are unaware, I was just surprised by everything was covered here. I mean, for those people listening, Bring Your Care to the Life with Dr. David Race in Vance, Nevada. There was Social Media or Bust with Lil Egypt, who used to be in GLOW, and Billy Corrigan, who is running Resistance Pro, a ECW, obviously, which he was a fan of, heavily influenced group, which just had a local TV deal in Chicago. The View from WWE with Jim Ross. Handling Bumps Outside the Ring with Dr. David Reese and Angelina Altishin in a panel discussion where they talked about basically what you can run into as far as planning for the future, dealing with injuries, sexual harassment, career changes needed by various circumstances, play chess, not checkers in the ring with Kizarni. Everything was covered. Not everything, of course, but it's certainly a wide range of things. And did you have a chance to go to that Handling Bumps Outside the Ring? Because that was the one that stuck out as, you know, things like sexual harassment and everything in this day and age and planning for your future, which so many guys, you know, did not do for years and don't do now. What was, of all of those things or any of those things, what were some of the more interesting things that came out of these sessions for you? Now, obviously, many people talk about
you know, I didn't take notes, but Rich will be happy to know that the media thing with Corrigan, I thought was very interesting, and you know, and it did open my, you know, I won't be hooking up with Twitter in the next 5 minutes or anything like that. Nothing quite so radical and drastic. Like I said to you guys in email, they hold your breath and Twitter. But you know, he was talking about different ways to use, Facebook or you know, things like that. And one of the things that I don't do and I wouldn't do, and he suggested not to do because it's just wasting your time, is when some idiot gets on and says something negative, you know, writes something negative, to waste your time with, you know, in some sort of stupid debate. Because that's not going to change that person's mind, and it's not going to elevate you necessarily in anyone's eyes either, you know. But to use those things in a proper way to advertise your product and get your product out there. And he was saying, you know, he said, I know I'm not sometimes the most popular. I mean, I'm not on his Facebook or on MySpace or anything like that. I'm not on those other things anyway. But he was saying, you know, how valuable it comes with Smashing Pumpkins, which is the band that he has. And how some of that had translated into wrestling. So it was, you've got the itinerary there. Obviously it was very interesting. I'll be honest with you. DeMont and I went to Chiazzarni's seminar more out of curiosity as to what, you know, he was going to present, and he did a very good job, and he also covered this whole thing about, you know, laying it all out and, you know, and why you really need to be able to call a match in the ring. And I say, JR said, you're not a wrestler, you're not a worker. He said I go crazy listening to these guys talk for an hour about a match that's going to last 5 minutes. And like I say, Austin made that comment. One of the other things that Steve mentioned, too, because Steve got the Iron Mike Award. That's named after Mike Mazurki, who was the founder of Cauliflower Alley. And Steve was the last person presented with an award in the evening, and opposed to him making a long speech or any type of real speech, except to say he was honored and, you know, and thanked everyone for the honor. But he threw the it opened to questions from the floor, and one of the things they were asking about, one of the things he didn't like about the current product, and I can't quote him because I didn't write it down, was the fact that the people are being, words are being put in people's mouths. And you and I touched on the, you know, the Lesnar thing earlier tonight. But he said, you know, learn to work. And Steamboat, learn to work. Sergeant Slaughter, learn to work, Bill. You know, and it's like, I hope somebody hears this, you know.
Well, you know, one of the things I heard, you know, the negative things, and yeah, Jim Ross says, well, yeah, well, this is what they're pumping out, and everybody looks the same, they talk the same, and it's like, okay, yes, you know, there is a, you know, I'm sure JR can't get up there and say what he truly wants to say, but with that said, when you look, and it's, you know, to me, the whole, you know, in this situation with WWE is not greater than the sum of its parts, but you look at Bryan Danielson, CM Punk, Chris Jericho, you know, some of the guys that they need to rely on to keep the thing chugging and moving, and they're relying on Brian, you know, to help Sheamus out, you know, and Jericho and Punk, you know, again, Jericho, I mean, nobody ever thought that CM Punk and Brian, you know, Bryan Danielson in this day and age would get their due, and in a lot of ways they haven't. But with that said, the cream has risen to the top because they did put time into their craft, and they do know how to talk, and they do know how to get people over and how to work and the whole nine yards. And even if they're put in compromising situations, you know, you brought it up, and we both brought it up, and you especially when it came to that Kofi Kingston-Dolph Ziggler match that Dave and Brian loved, but it's like they're showing air everywhere. They're acting like they don't care. They're going through the motions where, you know, at some point it will pay off. Even if you're put in a bad situation, the cream will rise to the top. And I found it, you know, that some of the negative comments that came, well, you know, JR, of just like, you know, how can he say that? And this is what they're putting out. It's not Steamboat or Kern's fault or Dusty's fault or JR's fault or you when you had Heartland and Jim Cornette when they had OVW. They're going to do what they're going to do, but that doesn't mean that you cannot have pride in what you do and make it pay off for you, because sooner or later, you know, if given the break, you'll need to do it.
Well, you know what you're saying, like, you know, some, how, well, you know, one of the guys from the old Minneapolis contingent, Dale Spears, he happened to fly to Cincinnati to catch his flight out of here and back to Charlotte, so he and I shared a seat and, you know, 4 hours worth of airtime between Vegas and here to talk to, and he was talking about some website that is, I guess, invitation only. I'm not sure. I don't remember the name, and I'm on enough websites as is already. I don't read boards, message boards. That's, I've learned that to keep my blood pressure at a milder level, it's the best I don't. But he was saying that someone from out of the country had said, why is the old bastard, if he doesn't like the product, why does he watch it? Meaning talking about me. And Dale said, well, first of all, he does talk shows, and second of all, he's right. It's... You know, the product isn't what it's supposed to be. But see, and there is part of, I think, the problem with the learning. It's not just fans. It's kids who want to work or who want to be wrestlers. Bo calls them play wrestlers in his book. I've called them hobbyists. There were kids around this area years ago that were insulted that I called them hobbyists. I'm sorry, do you pay your bills with the wrestling business? No. Okay. Well, then I would assume you're probably a hobbyist. I don't know. If you play golf and don't make a living at it, you're not a pro golfer. It's just that simple. But anyway, you know, they want to be told what they want to hear. I don't know how many young guys are listening to this, or if any, you know, that are in the wrestling business or trying to get in the wrestling business or just getting a start in the wrestling business. But here's the deal. The person who's blowing smoke up your ass is not your best friend. the guy who's telling you you're ready to go to the top and you don't need the fact that you only weigh 165 pounds and don't have an ounce of muscle on you is okay. And it's really cool that you can do a 16 rotations off the top rope before you hit the floor. And that's all you need to be in WWE or TNA. He's full of crap. He's not your best friend. He's a guy. He may think he's doing you a favor, but he's not by lying to you. I won't tell you I'm your best friend to Ricky Steamboat or Bill DeMott or Jim Ross, but those who are telling you the truth, you can only and telling you to improve on it. They're not mad at you. They don't hate you. They're not insulting you. They are critiquing you, and that's who you need to listen to. Of course, your girlfriend, thinks you're the best wrestler she's ever seen, and your mother probably thinks you're the most handsome child she's ever seen. But then she's biased, you know. It's true, you know. I mean, and I believe me, I've heard Flair say this. I've heard several guys. They hate to go to these independent shows and say somebody say, "Have you seen my match?" Yes. Well, what'd you think? And then they start to tell them the truth and. And the person just is upset. You know, well, wow. You know, obviously Ric Flair is jealous probably of these kids too. I'm sure, you know, his career is such wishy-washy. You know, I mean, but a lot of them take that stance. Well, that old guy, he's jealous. Well, of what? I mean, you ask an opinion, you're getting it, you know? And that's what, you know, yeah, if, you know, my involvement in bodybuilding and wrestling are similar in as much as if you are a participant in either pursuit, if you can't take criticism, you're in the wrong friggin' business. The only way to get better is somebody to tell you what you're doing wrong. And if you keep doing it wrong, they're going to keep telling you it's wrong until you get it right. And I don't know how many hundreds of kids I've actually had an opportunity to work with over the years as a trainer. I really don't know. I'd love it if every one of them was a top star. You know, I don't want any of them to. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's probably a few that I'm happy failed if they did, or a few might have made it. But I mean, you get my point. You know, you want these. The reason you spend the time. That was one of the things that some of some of the kids that were around me, started with me, told new guys coming in. You know, if he's on your back, if he's on you. That's a good thing. That means he thinks you've got some potential. If he's not on you, that's not a good thing, because then he figures that you're just filling time here anyway. And you know, you've got to understand that. And
well,
that's the long and short of it, Mike. I mean, they really need to pay attention.
Well, it shows that the lack of, and again, maybe my coming up in sports was different, but you know, it's repetition. That's what, you know, yes, you did it great. Okay, you know, fine, do it again. Yeah, that's what practice was, and it sucked, and you hated your coaches sometimes, but it goes and pays off later. It just, you know, again, it seems to me, too, where it's like it's way too easy to get into the wrestling business now. Guys aren't getting trained well, but it's because they were actually able to order a pair of trunks and a pair of boots and wrestle once a month. It's like you accomplished something. No, you didn't. You didn't.
That's like I went to the GLOW show to with the girls on Monday night. I didn't go to the show at the CAC, because one of the girls that I knew had worked with in the past, you know, was on that show, and I was more curious about that. Anyway. Somebody there in talking to some of the girl and what had told me how long she'd been working, right? And I 2 minutes into her match, I turned to the David Jackson, who is the gentleman I went out there to do business with, and I said, she might have said 5 years, but she meant 5 months or 5 minutes. But I mean, it was just obvious that she didn't know how to work. I mean, everything was rushed and just sloppy. Nice kid, but she was under the impression that she had accomplished something that period of time. And I don't know who her trainer was, and don't care. She was rough, very rough, and needed a lot of work. But yet, you know, when I said how long have you been working, and she told me she was very confident that it was all good.
how was that show from top to bottom and everything? Obviously, you spoke about going out there. You know, it was almost like a business thing. But just what were your – you obviously don't want to get into your business too much here. Or, you know, whatever you want to say about it would be great. But just from watching and critiquing, you know, that show, you talked about her. But, you know, what was your feelings coming out of that thing?
Well, you know, the original Glow Girls are the original Glow Girls. The one wrestler that came out of that was Ivory, you know.
Tina Ferrari, Lisa, yes.
Yeah, Lisa. Who I got a chance to say hello to, you know, we'd worked together in WWE, and she's a sweetheart. I love her to death. She's good people. Anyway, she was honored out there this year. But there were basically two girls that I thought were good, and that was Sarah Del Rey and Taylor Hendricks.
Yeah.
I've heard all the, you know, it wasn't a big crowd. A lot of the original, well, you know, the original girls were more entertainers. And a lot of those, you know, when was that show on the air? In the late 80s, right?
Yeah, like mid-80s.
Yeah,
86,
so,
87.
You know, it was more like a reunion for them. Apparently, they're going forward with production. They're going forward with production and starting, I think, in August or something. But there were two good wrestlers on the show, and that was Sarah Del Rey and Taylor Hendricks. Other than that, there were some girls with some potential. But the original girls are, you know, were the entertainers, basically. And if any of them are going to be in the, from what they tell me, they would like to, you know, elevate the in-ring performance. And so, you know, if that's the case, I told the guy who has the thing, I said, I saw 15 minutes of one Glow, and that was the end of it years ago because, you know, that was, and talking to one of the girls, I said, no, you wouldn't be offended if you were me, if you'd fought your way out of arenas and bars and, you know, given your body to the business, you know, like we have, then no, you wouldn't be insulted when you saw a inferior product in the ring. You would be offended by what you saw. No reason for you guys to be insulted. We were the ones. But then it wasn't meant to be, you know, a wrestling product at the time. But that's what I'm told now, that they want to improve that. I mean, it's obviously going to be a variety show as well. You know, they're looking at casting girls that can sing and dance. Now, Taylor, they called her VH1, and she came out with the big girl that was MTV back in the old Glow. And I commented to Taylor. I said, you fit right. I mean, she really did. I mean, she got right in with a shtick, but when it came down to wrestling, she wrestled. The girl she was with wasn't that experienced and was hesitant. The same with Sarah. You know, the girl she was with was not that sharp, you know, in terms of technical wrestling. So that's, to me, that's the point. And this, you know, here's the thing. If I were doing it, Mike, to me, the catch is, obviously, you want women who are attractive. But they can be, a valley girl or some goofy thing. But the minute the bell rings, they become a technician, you know, take down switches and make them good. Because, and I said this in my conversation with anybody that I had there, I said, the sexiest woman in the world, if she's clumsy in whatever it is, whether it's dancing or wrestling, that detracts from her sensuality. Would you not agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of, you know, Beth Phoenix being an example of actually that now, where there are far prettier girls as far as quote unquote, you know, your Kelly, your models that they've got, which are essentially models, flat out, they are models, you know. In Beth Phoenix is the most over one because, well, she's in shape, you know, and obviously, you know, her level of wrestling compared to a Sarah Del Rey or a Hamada or somebody like that, it's different because she's not working with those people. But one of the things I think that stands out is she is different and she is athletic and she is pretty. And
yeah,
it's all wrapped up. And again, you know, whether you think she got too much muscle or not or any of that stuff, she stands out far more than any of the generic, you know, pretty faces and bright white teeth, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I told the Eric, the guy who's putting this whole thing together, I said, if it were me, they're talking about doing a casting call, you know, for entertainers, you know, good-looking women that are entertainers. And then I said, you're not going to turn them all into wrestlers overnight or over 3 months or over 4 months. I don't care if they train 5 days a week. It just, you can't be guaranteed that. So to me, I would, well, besides Sarah and say Taylor as your foundation, I'd hire somebody like a Melissa Anderson, who's a very attractive young lady and a hell of a worker, or Chrissy Vane, who's not even in the business anymore, who was a very attractive young lady and a hell of a worker, as a foundation, because those are the girls that can cover the mistakes of the less experienced. I mean, to a certain degree, they're not going to be able to cover every little mistake, but it's going to elevate the level of in-ring talent that you use. Plus, all those girls I mentioned are attractive, in good shape, and can go. You know, that would be if it were my project, and if I were the guy, you know, calling the shots, that's exactly what I'd do. You know, from watching that show in Vegas. If any of the original girls are still going to be part of the cast, and I'm under the impression that some are, they're going to have to be retrained because they know absolutely nothing about professional wrestling and a lot about just being, you know, doing shtick and entertaining. Some of them were involved in matches where they were just horribly in the wrong place at the wrong time and too early with something and not on time with something else. But, I mean, again, that was never the intent back in the 80s when they were brought on anyway. Wrestling, quality wrestling wasn't what they were selling. So,
well, yeah, and as a kid sitting there watching it, you know, when Hollywood and Vine or The Farmer's Daughter came on, hey, you know. Although I'll say this, even at that time, though, when Ivory, she was not on for 1 or 2 years, you know, well, at least when the thing first started, and then she did come on. And granted, she is a fireball of energy in the whole 9 yards anyway. She actually stood out. Again, even as a kid watching, you could tell there was something different with this, you know, essentially what was a TNA jiggle show,
right,
and that sort of thing. She actually stood out, whether she was getting hypnotized or not, I think was the big storyline with her. But she got to the end, didn't even realize what time it was here. We had only a couple minutes left, so it's time to get in the plugs here. A fast 2 hours going by, and once again, want to thank Bo James. And I got good news, as Rich has alerted me, that our at Ringside Rap Twitter account and Les Thatcher are both trending.
Well, I'm just so excited. I don't know what to say. What I did hear while I was in Vegas, and I haven't been made totally aware of it yet, is that some of the Hall of Heroes inductees for Charlotte in August were announced, and I understand that I'm among them.
Ah!
Jerry Briscoe, Thunderbolt Patterson, Wrestling 2, and moi. And I'm sure there'll be more. I'm not sure who, but yeah, that was a couple Patsy and Emily that helped Greg up in Charlotte. We're in Vegas, and Emily told me. And so anyway, I guess it's okay to let that cat out of the bag too. But so yeah, I'm very honored and pleased to be a part of that. I was looking on the NWA Legends Fan Fest website. That's a hell of a roster, that Hall of Heroes, man. We could run a hell of a territory with that crew.
Oh man, congratulations, Les.
Thank you. I'm like I say, I'm pleased. I'm very honored and humbled by it. So, especially the Gwen Thunderbolt and Briscoe and I socialized quite a bit. Well, Wrestling 2 and I have socialized quite a bit too. But the three of us were batching it in the 70s and early 70s in Charlotte. So we cut a pretty wide path through the social scene at that time. So it'll be fun to go in with all those guys.
Oh, I just want to slip in here, too. I won't bother to plug my stuff. You know where to find me, for God's sakes. But PSP tomorrow night's got Greg Oliver on it, which is awesome right there. And Les, if anyone will get a hold of you, how do they do it before they hear the Bob promo that you missed at the beginning of the show?
Les@EPWT.com. EPWT, which is for EliteProWrestlingTraining.com. Les@EPWT.com, if they're interested. And I think I'm going to be involved with David Jackson as a consultant. He's getting ready to, well, once we get some details on it, it's going to be Southern California. He's planning on running. His background is in fundraising for charities and nonprofit organizations. And I was very impressed with this young man the time I spent with him in Vegas. And so anyway, he's planning on doing the same thing in Southern California with wrestling, probably six shows a year, each one for a different charity. But what he plans to do, or the hope is a year-long tournament. Each one of these six shows will be, you know, part of that tournament, and then there will be one champion announced for that particular year. So I'm really excited if it flies. You know, like I say, I'm not moving to the West Coast or anything, but I'll be involved in a consultant's capacity. And so I'm really looking forward to it. He's supposed to get back to me in the next couple of weeks. He's getting with his people to see if the project itself is going to fly, and if so, I'll be involved in some manner.
Awesome. This is one of the great sports bet technology now. You just have them wire in everything to you. You just sit there in the comfort of your own home and then be able to do things from there. But while you're also still sitting there in the comfort of your own home, hang on the line, Les, just so you can hear this. And for everyone else out there, have a very good night. We're going to talk to you again next week.
You sent me a link today, Bob, and I clicked on it, and Internet Explorer wouldn't let me get on that site.
All right. Well, I'll see if I can send it again. I'm not sure.
Were you trying to give me a virus? Is that what it was?
I was trying to send you stuff to help enhance you more in more ways than one. So that's
all right.
I
love to be enhanced. At this age, I need all the enhancement I can get.
I know.
Les, have a good night, sir.
You too, Michael.
Hey, night, Rich.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.